Now, on the level of the Mahayana, or within the context of the Mahayana, the Lama or the Guru appears as, or functions as, what is known as the Bodhisattva. A Bodhisattva, we may say very broadly, is one who has attained a high level of spiritual perfection, who occupies quite a high place in the spiritual hierarchy, who has gone very far, as it were, who is nearing nirvana, but who at the same time renounces nirvana for himself. Now, the idea at the back of this statement is that as one progresses in the spiritual life, as one dissociates oneself more and more from the things of this world, from the samsara, it becomes possible for one, as it were, to complete the dissociation, to cut oneself off from the world, from the samsara, from other beings, and to remain in a state of spiritual peace and calm, and even happiness, quite apart from the other beings of the universe. And this is what Buddhism calls a sort of individual or private nirvana, away from the sufferings and miseries of the world. So this sort of possibility is open to the Bodhisattva when he reaches a certain level of his spiritual development. But he doesn't follow that particular path or that particular way. The Bodhisattva decides to remain, as it were, in contact with beings within the samsara, and to devote his spiritual energies, to devote the spiritual knowledge and experience and understanding which he has acquired to helping others within the samsara to make spiritual progress, themselves to become free. So this is what is meant by the guru, by the lama, the spiritual superior, within the context of the Mahayana. Here he appears as the Bodhisattva. Not only does he renounce, according to Tibetan tradition, his own individual nirvana, but he voluntarily allows himself, as it were, to be reborn on this earth in another human body, so that he is able to continue his work of helping and guiding and teaching other living beings. Now, this sort of idea, this sort of Bodhisattva ideal, is common to all the Mahayana countries. You find it in China, you find it in Japan, you find it everywhere else. But in Tibet, it has been given a very special development. The Tibetans, one finds, are a very practical people. They're not satisfied with generalities. They're not satisfied with abstractions. They want to come down to details, as it were, that they want to know things in truth and in fact. So the Tibetans weren't satisfied, as it were, just by being told in general, in a sort of general way, that bodhisattvas renounce their individual nirvana, bodhisattvas allow themselves to be reborn on earth and to take human form to help others. The Tibetans wanted to know, well, where are they and who are they? They wanted to try to identify them, to locate them, almost, we may say, to hunt them down. So in this way, they developed among the Tibetans, in Tibetan Buddhism, in the course of the last few hundred years, the institution of what became known as the Tukus, or what we usually call in English, the incarnate lamas, who are not so much incarnate lamas as incarnate bodhisattvas. And the most famous of these, of course, are the Dalai Lama and the Panchen Lama, though there are many others. And a lot of books, quite a number of books, describe the way in which they are discovered and identified and installed and trained and taught and so on. Now, I would say myself, as a result of my own observations and studies, that in Tibet itself, in the course of generations, there has arisen a certain amount of confusion in the popular mind on this question, on this subject of the incarnate lamas. Nowadays, Tibetan Buddhists usually think that if a certain child can be positively identified as the reincarnation of a certain deceased abbot or teacher, then he's automatically a tukku, an incarnate lama or bodhisattva. But strictly speaking, that is not so, because you'd have to prove to begin with that the original abbot or the original teacher was himself a bodhisattva before you could speak of his reincarnation as being an incarnate bodhisattva. So very often the Tibetans tend to think that anybody who can be identified as the rebirth or reincarnation of somebody else is automatically an incarnate lama. So in this way, many who are merely identified reincarnations are popularly regarded as incarnate bodhisattvas. So in this way, in the whole of Tibet, so I was told, one had in the old days about 2,000 people who were popularly regarded as incarnate lamas. I regret to say that out of all of them, there's only one woman, apparently. They were all men. But this is neither here nor there. That's just by the way. But it would seem to me, as I've said, that the Tibetans nowadays make the mistake of identifying as an incarnate lama those who are merely identified as reincarnations of deceased abbots and so on. I remember once in a lecture, Mr. Christmas Humphreys put the matter rather well. He said that most incarnate lamas are really the sort of equivalent, as it would be in this country, of the local vicar reborn. So this just about sums it up in most cases. Very, very few out of the 2,000, one would say, can really be regarded as incarnate bodhisattvas. That may be the Dalai Lama and the Panchen Lama and just a few others, some of whom I've known, but perhaps not many more than that. Now, on the Mahayana level, as bodhisattvas, the Lama is a teacher in two ways. First of all, he's a teacher by virtue of his mere presence in the world among people. Tibetans attach very great importance to this. The fact that there is in the world a spiritually superior being, a lama, a guru, or, in this case, a bodhisattva. The mere fact that he is here is itself a great thing. He doesn't necessarily have to do anything. He doesn't necessarily have to say anything or teach anything. The Tibetans believe by virtue of the mere fact that he is here, that in the midst of ordinary people, there is someone who is extraordinary, who is spiritually more gifted, spiritually more highly attained. This mere fact itself that carries its own influence and its own blessing. So therefore they regard it as of the utmost importance that these people should just, as it were, be in this world, just be here with us, regardless of what they say and of what they do, the mere virtue of their presence, as it were. Secondly, the guru or lama, as a bodhisattva within the context of the Mahayana, functions as a teacher of the Mahayana itself, and especially of what is called the Shunyatavada, the philosophy of the Mahayana, and of the six perfections which lead to Buddhahood. That is to say, dana or giving, sila or ethics, kshanti or patience, virya or vigor, samadhi or meditation in the higher sense, and prajna or wisdom also in the higher sense. Again, the guru or lama as bodhisattva in the context of the Mahayana gives to others the bodhisattva vow and ordination and the bodhisattva precepts. This is on the comparatively ecclesiastical level, but it does have its own function and its own importance.